Just while we, hey, morning. Just while we're waiting, the last couple of minutes, I'd like to just do a quick show of hands on a few things, so help pitch this talk. Right. Everybody over there's like, no, you're not supposed to start yet. I haven't, honest. Quick show of hands. Who would consider themselves a developer or attached to the developer-like people at your organization? Cool. I'd say a little under half, do you think? Yeah. Who is attached to the IT kind of management operations side of the house and the thing? Fortunately, most of the rest of the hands went up, which is good. Who is certified security something or other? Keep your hands up. No, keep them up. This is payback for all of the RFIs I've had to fill in. Keep them up, nice and high. We're going to get started in just 1 minute. Those RFIs are amazing. They're my favorite question of all time is, how is your data center more than 150 feet away from a gas station? And when you read these questions, you've got to kind of try and guess what the person who wrote the question is getting at. Now, I totally get that some data centers are above coffee shops and next to gas stations and 7-Elevens and that kind of thing. But it turns out our security fence is more than 150 feet away from the data center. So I was pretty confident that we were more than 150 feet away from a gas station. I didn't mention the 200,000 gallons of gasoline we keep on site to power the 72 backup generators. Should I have? I don't know. Anyway, we're starting. My name is David Egan. I'm a Windows Azure product marketing specialist or something like that at Microsoft. I've been working with Windows Azure in the cloud for about 4 years, a little over 4 years now, back in January 08 when it was called Red Dog, and it was an internal project. And I have this philosophical talk on how secure is the cloud, and I thought I'd make a joke and I'll go, not very secure at all. You should all go and rethink that. Any questions? And that might get a chuckle out of a few people. Part of my previous jobs in evangelism and in what we call incubation sales as a technical guy. By the way, I kind of spend most of my time, I would say I'd spend most of my time in Visual Studio, but now I'm kind of into Node and PHP and things, so I'm all over the place these days. But part of my role was to actually fill out those darn RFIs and try and figure out what the right answer should be for the company. So I have a little bit of experience here. So I thought I'd start off with a bit of an agenda, and since it's a security talk, I've encrypted it with my private key. If you have the public key, you will know exactly what we're going to be doing. Other than that, it is a bit classified. Now, what I thought would be interesting is I read through the abstract, which is useful as a presenter, because then you know what you should be talking about. And it had four questions, and I thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we answered the four questions? That would be a novel thing. Read the abstract, da-da-da-da-da. Go to the talk, get the question answered. That would be kind of a novel thing, I think. So those are the questions. We're going to come back to those questions towards the end, but we're going to have to set some context and things as we go along and learn a little bit about the platform. Given there's a bit of a mix between IT pro and developers, and we've even got a few security people in the audience, we're going to go on this journey through from physical data centers through to X509 certificates and lots of things in between. So do bear with us as we go through this. I also spent a bunch of time in the last few weeks hanging out with Scott Guthrie's UX team. So my slides have suffered because of that. So when I think about security and people talk to me about, you know, I want to put this app in the cloud, I want to put this data in the cloud, it's all about kind of a bunch of things it boils down to. No matter what question they're asking me, there's a few things that I think about. And the first one is confidentiality. If I'm putting my data in the cloud, is it safe? Can Microsoft access it? That's always the first question. Can you access it, Dave? Of course I can. I work at Microsoft. We have all these back doors. The password's just pass at word one. And then you get in everybody's data. In fact, we wrote a little PowerShell script to go and mine credit card information from the thing. Of course we didn't do that, man. Dear me. Can we access the data? Probably not. There's an asterisk alongside everything. We'll get to that. Can my competition access my data? We're in a multi-tenanted system. Can I see other people's data? Can they see mine? What about all the vendors you use? Can they see my data? What if the FBI come along? Can they see my data? So, there's all those kind of questions. Then did you muck with my data? So it turns out that a lot of these compliance things and certification isn't necessarily about protecting the data, it's making sure it didn't change. Example, FDA in the US, drug trials and things, if you have data about the results of a drug trial and you want to store it in a computer system, you have to have guarantees around auditing of access to and changes to those documents. Because if you say, hey, this wonderful drug cures obesity, yet everybody grows an extra head as a side effect, you want to be able to produce the evidence that, hey, well, when we tried it, nobody grew a second head, kind of thing. And then there's availability. Can I actually access my data when I need it? And that's kind of critical as well. We don't want to kind of go, well, your data is really safe and really secure, and if you fill out this document and send it to us, in 28 days' time, we'll send you your data. Right? It has to be kind of on all the time. And with those things in mind, we have to think about risk. That's all it ever boils down to is, if I'm going to do this, put this my app or my data in the cloud, what's the risk to me? And that's important as well. The guys working in the security field will understand the gravity of the me piece. Because at the end of the day, somebody is liable when it all goes pear-shaped. When the secrets do get stole, there is somebody that they need to point the finger at. And it could be from a legal standpoint as well, which is a bit worrying. Not only me, but also the business. What's the risk to the business having that data out there? What's the risk to the business of losing the data or for having it compromised in some way? There's also the risk to the business from legal side of the house. There may be some compliance things that we have to think about. If I'm in the banking industry, I've probably got to comply to a couple of laws here and there to make sure I'm not money laundering and that kind of thing. So when we're moving to the cloud, we've got to think through these things. Now, when the data center is mine and I can walk in and put my arms around the machine and I hired all the people and wrote all the process and had my auditors come in and verified all that, it's really easy. I own everything from end to end. Even if I have a vendor supplying the operating system and the database software and everything else, the customer, me, is still responsible. And then I go and move to this multi-tenancy cloud where I'm alongside my competitor, probably running on the same piece of hardware in the same data center, run by some company that is called Microsoft, and hopefully they're the good guys. And they probably have a whole bunch of stuff. I'm pretty hoping that they've done background checks on them and made sure that they're not kind of, you know, associated with WikiLeaks or some kind of mafia organization on there. So there's a lot of kind of things to worry about. There are some different responsibilities. There's some things that you do not have to worry about now because you are in the cloud. I say you don't have to worry about it. Rather, there's nothing you can do about it. Let's face it, you're still going to worry about it. Okay? I'm going to tell you that we set the network up fine. That, by the way, for those, it's a Jedi mind trick. The network is perfectly secure. You've got to trust me on that. Okay? No one can access your data. Again, you've got to trust me on that. So, how do you trust some guy from Northern England, who may be a little bit dodgy, we don't know, telling you that all is well? Well, why does this matter? Why do we have to trust them? Well, there's a whole bunch of reasons why we have to kind of trust people. Sometimes it's we have a legal requirement to meet. FSMA is a great example where we have to meet a certain standard. There may be some industry certifications that we've got to meet because we're in the banking or we're in the drug industry. There's certainly some international standards and so on. And there might also be internal ones. They're the best as well, which are normally a hybrid of everything in there and a few more questions shoved in for kind of comic relief, I think, sometimes. So there's a whole bunch of these industry certifications. So part of what we're trying to do at Microsoft is think, you know what, we can't have all of you send your auditors into our data center to do an audit. That just doesn't scale, okay? Besides, you probably wouldn't be happy with your competitor's auditor coming into our data center and auditing the machines you're running on anyway, so that all gets interesting. So there's all of these compliance things that we can go and do. And the idea is, how do we build that trust up? How do we have a third party usually come in and say, hey, you know what, Microsoft are doing these things. They've got the tick in the box. They're making sure that they have the right controls in place and they're running the system well. You've got to kind of remember as well is our data center investment isn't just a couple of racks in a shared colo somewhere, and our security guy isn't just what he does on a Friday afternoon, okay? There's quite a few of the security guys, and they work all of the week on it. So in terms of compliance, and I've got in brackets core services. This is where our sausage factory gets exposed. Core services are, it's easier telling you what core services are. So from a Windows Azure point of view, core services isn't SQL Azure or anything that has a dependency on SQL Azure or SQL Database, as we renamed it to. So that would be Access Control and Service Bus right now. Pretty much everything else, the networking, the VMs, the web roles, the worker roles, the VPN stuff, virtual machines, all that websites, all that kind of thing are covered in scope on these certifications. So that's what we mean by core services. Trust me, that was a hard name to come up with. So we've got ISO 27001, which is kind of the basis for everything. We've just got SSE 16, which is an auditor kind of thing. I forget how all these work. Well, great thing about SSE 16 is the bit that says you've been doing it for a while. It's about 6 months. So you're happy that those controls are in place and are effective for 6 months. As well as the usual US EU safe harbor, we can also sign an EU model clause as well, which is quite important for people doing business outside of the US. I was trying not to mention Patriot Act in this talk, and I did, and that's all I'm going to say. Next, we're looking at HIPAA Business Associates Agreement. If you're in the healthcare space within the US, HIPAA is quite important. The term, oh, that means Windows Azure is going to be HIPAA compliant, is said by a HIPAA novice, I believe. The platform will never be HIPAA compliant because it depends upon the application that you're running on it. Your application could become HIPAA compliant. The way that happens is you call us up, you go, hello, Microsoft, can you sign me a BAA? And we go, certainly. Well, we don't do certainly right now. But in the how can I phrase this? Very soon, we'll be able to do that. So inside the next couple of months for sure on that. And the other big one we're working on is the FSMA, the federal government kind of stuff as well, which is quite interesting. And that'll come a little bit later than that. Now, you're kind of looking at that, and you're going, Dave, there's about 6,000 certifications not on your slide there. Yeah, I know. Trust me, I know. There are some that we probably won't ever do and some that we don't need to do, and you would be able to use the information from those auditor reports or have an auditor-to-auditor conversation that would kind of meet those requirements. There's other things that we will do, but we're not sharing yet on the roadmap where we are and what our next kind of focus is. So we all look in. We do think it's important to get the right certifications. If there's something huge missing, then please do come and see me at the booth afterwards, and we can talk about, you know, where that is in terms of priority. Since this talk mentioned cloud, there's probably a couple of things to think about. One, we do have a Windows Azure Trust Center. Woohoo! It's a website. And it's at that big URL, which you'll never remember. What's great is you can go to windowsazure.com and find it under support, then Trust Center. And we'll update this frequently with new security things. There's a whole bunch of information about privacy, about security, about the compliance stuff, and so on. And since the talk said cloud, I also thought, oh, what if everybody comes along and they're all like, hey, Dave, you didn't talk about Office 365, and that's cloud, right? So I thought I'd add Office 365 in a little bit. Office 365 is a little bit different than Windows Azure. Windows Azure, you're going to be deploying apps and VMs and stuff, and you have a lot more stake in the game. Office 365, you're kind of consuming a service. So the scope is a little bit different on that. However, they still need to have those compliance requirements for different things. What's great about this is we have the usual suspects. We can do HIPAA BAA on Office 365, and we also have a data processing agreement, which we can sign as well on that. So that's pretty good. They also have a trust center as well. Again, that's kept up to date with all of the latest kind of information on and so on. I was looking through the deck this morning. I was like, wow, I go from Office 365 to X509 certificates in about 7 slides. That's really good. So at Microsoft, we have a whole teams looking at security. Part of the development lifecycle is called the Security Development Lifecycle, SDL. And it's a set of practices that enable us to go and design software with security in mind. And then we go and build it with security designed into it. And then we go and operate it with security that was designed and built into it and operate it like that. So security is not just like, hey, we built this stuff. Perhaps we should put some sort of password on it at the end. At the beginning, we're thinking about the threats and how to mitigate against those, what's the likely attack vectors and so on. And we do this at every level, from the physical data center all the way through to user education. So let's kind of walk through some of these things. So first of all, our physical data centers. Like, if you've never been on a Microsoft data center tour, you have to wangle one somehow with your salespeople, okay? We do them. Not with everybody, but we do them. They're immense. There are a bunch of videos on YouTube and stuff of inside our data centers as well. And it's really cool because, you know, you go, how many servers did you buy this month? Might be a good question for you. You go, oh, I bought like 50 servers. It was a really good month. How many 40-foot containers did we buy this month? We're in an order of magnitude bigger. So everything is there's a lot more people working on everything across the board. Getting into a data center as a Microsoft employee is impossible unless someone from outside of the data center at a fairly high level has given you permission to go and visit the data center. You will get an in and out time. So if I get there 10 minutes early, I'm sitting in reception waiting. They won't let me in before my allotted time. And they'll make sure I'm out by the time I'm done. I went to one of our data centers about 2 years ago, and there were more security people in the building than there were operations people. When you automate everything, you can have a lot more security people with guns and stuff walking around making sure there's nobody else in the place. The concept of a secure rack was kind of lost because everything was locked up. Getting in required biometric controls from our tour guide. Getting into the server rooms required a different set of access. Getting into the server racks required another set of access. Security is sweeping the building constantly, making sure nobody isn't where their work order says they should be. The work orders are all approved by people that do not work in that building. So there's a separation of concerns there. Requires a conspiracy. So we do all of these things, and we're very kind of really thinking hard about how could somebody get into our data center. Good luck with that. The next thing is the network. A lot of the network is automated. What's really good about automation is you can really mess it up very quickly, but you can also get it right very quickly and make sure that it's the same over and over again. When you're deploying a VM or you're deploying an application into Windows Azure, The network configuration is driven from the configuration you give us or from the portal that you've clicked on. So it's all user-initiated. In terms of locking down the machine's network, we've got firewalls both throughout the load balancer. We do packet filtering on the host and the guest VMs. We use top-of-rack switches. We do all the best practices. I'm sure we write some of the best practices on security in data centers. We have VPN separation between tenants and the system. We have the ability to detect abnormal activity, which is interesting, and also mitigate against that as well. So there's a whole bunch of things we do for the network that you don't do. There's no switch to turn this on or off. We kind of do stuff. What we do, we're very verbose about what we do. We'll explain exactly what we do, what we use, how we do it, that kind of thing. You just have to ask us. On the Trust Center, there's some links to some papers and things. But we do it. There's no control over that. And that's part of the kind of, you know, losing control while maintaining accountability, I think, is the term we use. In terms of the host, so this is the VM that your code's running on, whether it was the VM you provided or not. We use Hyper-V. We've got Hyper-V isolation, protect side channel attacks. Who knows what a side channel attack is? It's awesome. One hand in the room went up. Okay, see how well I butcher this one. A side channel attack is a method where you can detect and kind of determine keys based upon the activity of the processor that you're sharing. It's a pretty advanced kind of thing. I'm not sure how many times it's been done outside of the lab, but the concept is mind-blowingly complex. We protect against that because you get isolated onto the core. So if someone else is running some code trying to detect what's going on your code, it's not going to work because you're on a different core. Everything's secure within the data center in terms of communication. So we send control messages when we deploy your application, when we want the machine to reboot. Any kind of information going throughout the data center is encrypted across an encrypted channel using X509 certificates or equivalent to kind of authenticate. By the way, once that code runs, once your VM starts running, we consider it hostile. The best way to think about it. I know it's not, but we consider it hostile. So the only thing we can do is kind of query it. We don't allow it to kind of instigate any activities on the network. So if it were compromised, the footprint of compromisation is pretty small on that. The OS we provide, so remember in Windows Azure now, you can upload your own OS, in which case you're responsible for securing that. You're welcome. When you use our OS, we use a kind of cut-down version. Not all of the services are enabled or turned on. There aren't any user accounts on the thing. This is awesome. There's no user accounts on the box. There doesn't need to be. We use network service and local. Problem is, to prove that, you've got to create a user account so you can RDP into it. How fun is that? But if you go and it's the only user there, which creates some problems, let me tell you. But you can RDP into the boxes. That requires creating a user account. So the host kind of secure out of the box. Once it starts running, there's a few things that you might want to do. First of all, if you're deploying an application that doesn't do anything particularly special, it's a website or something, there's probably little else to worry about. However, if you're allowing content to be uploaded, you may start thinking, oh, what if I get a virus uploaded or some malware or something like that? We do actually have a CTP of endpoint that you can run inside the host as well, and you can find out, I think, links to it from the Trust Center. If not, just do a Bing search, and you'll find it on there. People go, hey, Dave, I know this is very unlikely, but what if when you spin up that VM, been compromised already. Okay, let me explain how this works then. For that to have happened, someone would have had to put that compromise inside the Windows source code. If that's happened, we've got a bit of a bigger problem. So now we're on the application. So there's a bunch of stuff we do. When we go on the application, you can decide whether you want to run kind of in I can do everything mode, or you can run in a particular trust level. So if you're a .NET developer, you'll be familiar with the idea of a trust level. You want to think about running in the lowest trust you can get away with. Okay? In Visual Studio, I think there's an option of full trust or Windows Azure trust or something, or medium trust. You want to try and run in the lowest trust level. The idea there is, again, if your website gets compromised, there's less they can actually do. They can't actually interact with the registry, the file system, and that kind of thing. So you need to think about those. All of the configuration of the machine is done automatically. So you typically don't need to go in and kind of twiddle some buttons, fix some registry entries, do whatever you normally have to do to a machine. We're going to do it all from the service configuration that's delivered with the application. And this is a bit weird, because whilst it is locked down, we do inject a few things into it in terms of certificates. We put those in and some configuration. It sometimes causes a problem to the app developer who wants to maybe use a third party that needs a registry entry setting. So you've got to figure out, well, how do I do that automatically? I can't RDP into every box and set that, right? The other thing we do is we wipe the VM clean when we have to rebuild it. So you're kind of back to that base setup. So you've got to automate a lot of the configuration, which can be a little bit of a challenge. And I mentioned AV protection, which you have to put in. We don't. There isn't yet a button on the portal that says, I'd like to enable AV in my app, please. We're not doing that. You can use third parties. It's a little bit easier now with the new networking support of hooking that up to your enterprise. Particularly if you're deploying a VM, you can now deploy your AV with the VM and have it connect back to your corporate control center. So some things didn't really change. You still have a VM. You can still go and do a lot of those kind of tasks. In terms of data, we've got this two big storage systems in the cloud. One is SQL databases or SQL Azure. The other one is Windows Azure Storage, which are blobs, tables, and queues. For the SQL Server databases, it is just like SQL Server without the Windows authentication. So you're using SQL logins. You want to create an admin login. That's what we help you do on the portal, which you will never use other than to create some users for your databases. Okay? And you can have all the same permissions on tables, columns, views, stored procedures, and everything. It is just SQL. So things didn't really change there too much. We do have the ability to turn on a firewall in SQL Azure, or rather, it's on. There's no way of turning it off. So you do have to put IP addresses in there for people to be able to access it. And there is a magic button that says, let anybody in a Microsoft data center access it, which is a bit funny. And I thought about this, as I do sometimes. And I'm like, okay, I get where I can block the world. And then I'd like to be able to say, just my app. Not everybody else's app, just my app. Because you know what? If I was going to do a brute force attack on a database, and I needed a couple of thousand compute instances to do, I could probably do it in Windows Azure, right? Anybody tried hacking their neighbor's Wi-Fi password? If you've got a couple of hundred cores in Windows Azure, it makes for a fun science experiment on there. Anyway, did I just advertise Windows Azure as a hacking platform? I think I did. Storage keys. In Windows Azure Storage, we have the concept of storage keys. So you need a key to be able to access the storage. The great news is that's all you need. Once you have the key, you can read and write data. There is no ACLs or anything within the storage system. You can make things blobs. You can make blobs publicly accessible so then anybody can read them. They can't write to them. They can just read them. And the other thing you can do there is grant leases on a blob. So you can say, you can have this blob, but you can only have it for like 20 minutes. So some things you can do there. And then we have this kind of fun thing called trust services. Who's heard of trust services before? Oh my God, it's like a big reveal. Maybe I can count them on one hand. If people that got really excited, Dave, thank you for talking to us about security. We've built our app and it's all secure. We've encrypted all the data with a certificate, just like you told us. And I go, And where's the keys? In blob storage in Windows Azure. It's fantastic. And I go, oh, no, that's not right. If you put the keys and the data in the same place, you don't need to encrypt it. Just saying. It's like having a door to your house with a lock on, a little hook next to it with the key on. Exactly the same. I don't really, if you store data on our drives, it's all encrypted. Yeah, I know. And then you read it, and we automatically decrypt it for you and give you it. It's like, and you encrypt it. Why? Strangely enough, in our storage system, in Windows Azure Storage, not in the SQL database, that runs a little bit differently. We kind of imagine the room full of drives. Imagine every seat in this room is a drive, and we're going to write a 1 meg file or 10 meg file, makes the math easier. 10 meg file in. We're going to write that across 10 different drives, and then we're going to make two more copies of that. So now your data is spread across 30 drives, okay? Along with a few thousand other people's data intermixed with all that. So imagine it's all defragged and everything like that. Now, break in, steal a chair, go and have a look at the data on the disk. You've probably got lots of 1/10 of people's files on there. You're probably not quite sure where my data ends and someone else's data begins on that, because that's not on the disk either. So the drive's kind of a bit cruddy and a bit useless, which leads us to the question of, Dave, what if the FBI come in, take all the servers out? Because that's what they do. I read it somewhere. I go, yeah, okay. So first of all, probably take them a few months to get all the machines out. So that's really what they wanted to do. Second of all, we've got a little program that can suck the data out. Wouldn't you just build that? I mean, come on. On the subject of the FBI coming along, we don't just go, hey, FBI, here's all the data, like that. We try and direct them to you. And that usually works on that. So anyway, back to this. Don't put the keys and the data in the same place. So we have this thing called Trust Services. It's a CTP. It's in the SQL Azure Labs right now. And the idea is, like, hey, I need to be able to manage these keys. That's what it's all about. So if I'm going to encrypt some data, I want to be able to put the keys that I've secured this in a safe place. Now, this is from happy square slides with little numbers and pictures on to this. First of all, if you can follow me on this, you can all have a T-shirt somehow. I haven't got any T-shirts. I'm that confident. So we have an administrator. So a couple of things to point out. First of all, on the left-hand side, that would be, we've got the publisher. This is just a role. This is part of the app that's got to encrypt some data. In the middle, we've got the SQL database. And then on the other side, we've got a subscriber. They're going to be able to read the data out. And we've got a social security number for John Smith there. We want to encrypt the social security number. It's a good idea. Except the last four digits, because, hell, everybody just should wear that on a badge or something. Then we've got a trust server, which is running in a Microsoft data center. We'll worry about that. So, administrator, first of all, defines a policy with the trust server. So in order to do that, you've got to create a trust server. You've got to authenticate to it. We use an X509 certificate to authenticate to it. And then we'll create a policy. And in the policy, we're saying, hey, you know what? If you get an SSN, social security number, I'd like you to encrypt it, please. I'd like anybody who has the pub or the sub cert to be able to encrypt or decrypt it, and we're going to use the pub private public keys to do this. Once our policy is defined, we then want to encrypt the data. So the first step is we go and think of two things, right? One is we need a key. Key is K. And then we have a K-GUID. K-GUID is just a number so we can go and look this up. Think of it as like an identity column. We then go and take the data and encrypt it with the key, and that gives us the encrypted data. We then go and take that key and encrypt it with the public key, and that gives us WK. So we go and put the GUID, remembers the identity, into the trust server along with that encrypted key. We then go and put the encrypted data along with the lookup key into the SQL database. Super. So think about this a little while. In the database, I've got my encrypted data, but the key isn't there. In the trust server, I have an encrypted version of my key, but I'm going to need the private key to decrypt it. Okay? So let's talk through that. When the subscriber wants to decrypt, they go and take the key, they go and read the data from the database. It's all gobbledygook and encrypted. We go and take KGUID and we go and look up in the trust server what that is so we can get back the key. We then go and decrypt that with the private key, and that gives us the key that was used to encrypt the data. We then can go and take E out and then decrypt it using the key and get the social security number. Piece of cake, right? Awesome. I love the security world. It's full of the same acronym for 10 different things. And keys and public keys and subscriptions and policies and a bunch of other stuff on that. And I used to work with a guy called Vittorio Bertocci, who's a long-haired Italian. Absolutely stellar guy. Spent a lot of time trying to explain public key cryptography to me. And I think some of it's actually sunk in on that. So that's how trust services works. It's in CTP. You can actually kind of use it now. I thought it would be fun to kind of see how hard this was. So I'm going to show you a little bit of a demo, as much as I do demos nowadays on the screen. Who knows PowerShell? Like, why doesn't the whole room go, PowerShell, we love you, it's awesome. Okay, this is some PowerShell. And it's a very simple sample. In fact, it's so simple a sample, it's actually a copy of the sample you get with the SDK. I tried writing my own, but it was like really long, and I was like, why don't I just use this? So what I've got basically is a policy administrator, and I have a certificate which is in the key store on my machine, and that's the thumbprint for it. I also have one for the publisher and one for the consumer as well. I then set up a trust server, and I have a URL pointing to that. The next bit of code is really complicated. All it does is it goes and gets the certs. So now I have these variables that have the cert in there. Then what I go and do is I go and create a new policy, basically with the, I'm going to scroll along a bit of that, with the name Paul Admin. This is my policy URL. You could put anything in there. And this isn't a SQL one. We have different types of, you can build different types of policies. You can build one like this one, which is just a general data policy. You can also build a SQL one, which will actually go and attack columns in a data set and encrypt those. What we do is we're going to add a data policy to policy admin. And then we go and basically say, hey, I'd like you to authorize the publisher and the subscriber to that. So all this does is sets up a policy and allows, if you've got the publisher or the subscriber certificate, to access the trust server. Piece of cake. Next is my little program to do this. And the program just is that long, right? It's huge, really. So first of all, I go and create what we call a policy decision point. And this we can create a SQL policy as well, but this one's just a plain vanilla one. And we go and pass in the two certificates that I need on that. Oh, you know, you've seen my password. So I've got the administrator and I've got the data publisher private key there. I then go and get a transformation based upon the policy I've just defined. I then go on, and this is the really kind of cool bit, I go and read a file in. I then transform it, and I get a byte array which is encrypted, which I then write down to the text file. So it's fairly straightforward to kind of put together. You write to a text file. You could put it in a database. You could write it to blob storage. You could do whatever you like with it. But that's the kind of the least number of lines of code, which technically is four lines of code to do that. So it's fairly straightforward, I thought. In terms of running this, I have an input file. This is David Aiken. And one of these windows will have the file in here. So I've got input.txt. If I go and run trust text, which isn't like that, is it? I just want you to beware this demo's going to underwhelm you. This assumes we've got good network connectivity, which I'm confident of. Okay, it worked. It's funny, nobody ever reports. It's like, it just returned back to the prompt. Let's go and have a look at the encrypted text. So that's what it generated out of that. Fantastic. I told you you'd be underwhelmed. I was when I did it. Thank you. So, trust services, I suggest if you're working with any data, go and take a look at it. What's interesting is there's a lot of places in the world where if you have encrypted data, it doesn't fall under necessarily the laws for the data that it would be if it was unencrypted. So if I take my health record and I encrypt it, have I got a health record anymore? Have I just got a random set of bytes on there? It's food for thought. As long as you don't put the keys in the same place, that's always the key thing. So the last one is around user. And whenever we deal with users, is around two things. One is user education. Do the people that we employ in the data centers and on Windows Azure get security training? Yes. Do your guys? No. It's always funny how that works, really. Back when the data center was in your premises, and you could walk in and put your hands around it and stroke it and go, my server, I know it's secure. You could also slip an SSD drive on the back, copy all the data off, and walk out. Because the guy who would stop you from doing that, you employ. It's always really good, isn't it? It's like, hey, Jeff, how you doing? Yeah, bonus time of year again, isn't it? Yeah, oh, yes, it is, yeah. I'm just going to go over in this server here. You should stay here. Yeah, awesome, boss, thank you. So it's much easier to walk into your data center, plug an SSD drive in, copy all the data off a server than it is in our data. That said, over and above all of that, access control. This will get you all the time, and here's why. When you build applications for your enterprise or your business that are internal, at best, it'll be on a server that isn't accessible from the internet. Even better, sometimes you might actually have some sort of authentication on the app. Usually, none of those exist. So we have our little enterprise app that anybody on your corporate network can access and do all that, whatever they do on it. Fantastic. And then Mr. IT chief goes, hey, we're just going to move all these apps into the cloud. And it's going to be really good. And you move them into the cloud, and then all of a sudden, everybody in the world can access your application that doesn't have any security on. So, ooh, dear me. So there's a few things that we do. We have an access control service as part of the Windows Azure offering, which allows you to federate identity with public providers. So you can federate with, like, I don't know, Facebook or something like that, which, you know, if we were at, I don't know, South by Southwest, that might be remotely interesting. What's really interesting for you guys, I think, is our ability to go and federate with Active Directory, because most of the corporate world, I think it's something like 98% of the Fortune 1000 companies are using Active Directory. So it's probably a good technology to enable in the cloud. And what's great is if you use these technologies, if you use something like the Windows Identity Foundation to secure your app, it's going to work in your data center. It's going to work in our data center. That's really cool. It's worth looking into. So there's lots of layers. There's lots of things to think about. There's lots of things happening at every level. We try and catch ourselves out. We try and have the right audits in every place and the right controls in every place. When all of that fails, we also have sharks with lasers. What's funny is when you build a talk for TechEd, you're not allowed to use any artwork unless you own the copyright on it. How this came about, sideline for 20 seconds or so. We did a thing where asking people what feature they'd like to see in Windows Azure. Someone said, hey, we'd like sharks with freaking lasers on. So we thought, hey, isn't that cool? Let's go and build some marketing stuff around it. We did. You can go and visit our Facebook page and kind of see what the sharks are doing on any given day. I thought it was appropriate to put into the talk somehow. Okay, time for another demo. So we looked a little bit at trust services, but one of the biggest problems that I see over and over again when I'm working with customers, usually for other things, but it's a side effect, is configuration. Configuration? What do you mean? Well, let's say you've got an app and it needs to go and connect to a SQL database. You need to put a connection string somewhere. That connection string now can't use Windows authentication because it doesn't exist. So you've got to have a username and a password, and that's going to be in the config file. And that's where most developers go, huh, cool. Server name, password, awesome. We're done. Let's deploy. Go and get some beer. Sweet. It really shouldn't be the end of the story there. So I'm going to share with you, I actually used my the same password as, please mouse, please work. I actually used the same password on here as I use for my online banking. I'm going to show you right now. You ready? You all got your pens ready? Here it is. I will, since I'm kind, I will not only make the font really big so you can see it, I will also word wrap it. How many of you, let's be honest, anywhere have seen a config file where the database connection string looked like that? No, for the benefit of the recording, no hands went up. So, this is so easy to do. It is mind-blowingly simple to do. There's two ways you could do this. One is you could actually use trust services. We actually have a provider that you can use for configuration in there, and it will go to the trust server, do all the key thing, and get your data back. I implemented that, and it was kind of like, that was like hard work. So, this isn't. First of all, my app needs to be able to decrypt a string, because essentially that's what it's doing. What's going to happen is I'm going to read the string in, and actually just in case you do think I'm using my thing, my password actually is just pass that word one, which is good. But basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to read from configuration that string, DB connection string. Remember, back from here, that's the name of the setting. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw it through the decrypt string method. So I wrote this on the plane, which is always a good place to write code on the plane. So really simple. It's like half a dozen lines of code. I pass a string in. It's obviously base64 encoded. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to go and capture that anywhere. So I go and convert that. I then go and do some stuff which I don't rightly understand, but it involves going creating an envelope, grabbing from the My Machine Store. Somebody remember that it's in the My Machine Store. I'm going to open up the store, and then I'm going to decrypt the data. And basically what this does is it goes and looks through all the certificates, find the right one, decrypts it, and then I go and take the content of the envelope that I've decrypted and go and return that back as a UTF-8 string. Piece of cake. If you find the same blog post I did, you can just cut and paste that in as I did too on that. Great way to develop code, right? So that's kind of cool. So let's link up all the pieces, because even when people do this, there's a little bit, well, how do I get the cert into Windows Azure? Well, this is a cloud service. So this is not a VM that I've built. This is some code that I've deployed out. And in fact, if you want to look at what the app does, you can go to secretstuff.cloudapp.net. Or not, you know, don't push yourselves. So on the dashboard, I've got a bunch of things. It's running on one core because, hey, you know, I pay the bill. It was created, blah, 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 blah. Really interesting. We looked at the config. Oh, certificates. So what I've got here is the certificate that I've uploaded. So I uploaded this. I clicked on upload, and I browsed my computer to find a certificate, private with a private key, and then I uploaded it. Okay? This was a separate operation from uploading my app. Now, this is good because the developer can go and use one set of keys in the app, and then when it comes to actual production employment, you can switch the right keys into it. Okay? Always a good thing. And you'll notice the thumbprint there, 2752. I'm not going to remember that, am I? So back in here, into the config, I actually have the same certificate. I've uploaded it twice. I've called it certificate 1, current user, store my, as opposed to any other place where I might want to put it, and current user, not local machine. It's actually in twice because I've also enabled RDP. An RDP puts the cert into the local machine. And why do we need a cert for that? Well, we actually encrypt the RDP password when you set it up using a certificate, strangely enough. So the only last, so you build that, you go and deploy it, everyone's happy. The only last thing to think about is this. How do I encrypt it? And again, I pulled out some PowerShell and I actually wrote this, but I just kind of copied in my head the C# code that you saw earlier and wrote it in PowerShell so I could script it. And then I wrote it on my blog a while back, so you can find it on there. And basically what I do is I go and I have a method called, which mouse, this one, called encrypt. I pass in a string to encrypt. I pass the thumbnail of the certificate that I'd like to use. I go and get the certificate. I go and load the security assembly. I then go and basically encrypt the data and return it as a string, Base64 encoded string. Decrypt does the same, but backwards. So now what I could do is I could go and take this here and go into this PowerShell window here. Decrypt. And that's my secret, super secret connection string. So I want to build a new connection string, I would use encrypt and paste that in there. Okay? So this is a new thing you've got to do when you're deploying applications in the cloud. You've got to think about encrypting that configuration, especially in production systems on there. If I compromise the app and I can get at that configuration, I still need to be able to get at the key and everything to go and do the decryption and all that kind of thing. Now, yes, you can argue that certificate we uploaded, when we build the VM to put your app in, we actually go and inject that certificate into the certificate store on that machine. So if I can compromise the box, I can probably get at the key, but now I've just got this extra layer to jump through. And that's all a lot of this about, is just putting enough layers in front of it that either you're going to detect them doing it, or that window of opportunity doesn't allow them to get very far. So do think about encrypting not only the data, but also the configuration and everything that goes along with it as well. Back to this. What's my clicker? Okay. So back to those questions now. I love the first one. Does Windows Azure provide the rock-solid security requirement for the most sensitive data and applications? What do you think? Yes, ask me, yes it does. Nothing to see, move along. Of course it does. We've got all of these layers. You've got to decide, is it appropriate, right? If I am storing just my list of users that come to my user group and I've got their name and their email address and that kind of thing, am I happy the platform can protect me from those things, from someone stealing the email addresses and that kind of thing? All the way through the kind of physical, through to the network and everything like that, probably in a good place with Microsoft. I still have a responsibility myself at the application to protect that. And I might want to think about PII. I might want to actually encrypt the email addresses. Yeah, we hear over and over again stories of passwords being hacked, of email addresses leaking, of passwords leaking, and all sorts of things. Yeah. We've got to kind of go, well, what if that happened? Yeah? And I know, yeah, you could lose your kind of hashed passwords and so on. And that's a little bit of a problem. But, you know, you need to think about that. So we have this trust center. You need to go to it. You need to. And what's really good about the trust center for the three security guys in the room, when you go, haha, Dave, I'm going to send you an RFI, I'm going to direct you back to the trust center. And we have a kind of common request for comments kind of document on there, which you can use to fill out your own RFI. Okay? Now you might go, ah, Dave, that's not the way we roll. Well, if you're a multi-tenanted cloud public cloud service, that's the way we've got to roll, right? We can't fill out everybody's individual RFI document every time they come up. At one time, we had a backlog of about 16 or so documents. You might think, 16's not very bad. How many questions? You stuck your hand up as the security. How many questions do you normally have on an RFI? Ooh, yes. I don't know. A general one, just a couple of hundred questions. Yeah, 75 questions. So 16 times 75 is quite a lot of late nights typing mind-numbingly boring responses into an Excel spreadsheet. What's with the Excel spreadsheet, by the way? It's really hard to type and put diagrams and stuff in. Just saying on that. So we have a lot of controls. We're very confident about the level of controls and the systems that we have in place, the procedures and the technologies that we're using to protect the infrastructure and the network and everything else. But remember, it's like, do you trust me? Not many people would. So we're back to that kind of certification thing. We're going through the process. We've got the ISO. We've got the SSE 16. We keep working through those. And what's happening is independent orders are coming in and making sure that we got controls, that the controls are implemented, but also that the controls are appropriate as well. What's really good is we won't share the audit report with you. We'll share the audit report with your auditors. That's how it works. So you get your auditors, they talk to our auditors, they have a little conversation, I don't know what happens, but then they all become happy or not, as the case may be. And you, sir, had a great comment there. It depends. If I'm just protecting flight information, when my flight leaves, when it arrives, which places I fly from, all of this information might be in a database, but it's also browsable on a public website. Do I need to encrypt that? Probably not to secure it. Do I need to encrypt it to make sure the integrity? What I don't want is somebody to be able to hack in and change all the flight times, right? So, we've got to think about that angle. It's not just about encrypting data to prevent someone from looking at it. We want it tamper-proof as well. If I've got healthcare data, my patient data better not be in the cloud. And if it is, it better be encrypted, and the keys better be somewhere else. Just saying. So privacy of how do you ensure the privacy of sensitive information? That, my friend, is your responsibility. We provide a platform set of services that allow you to store and retrieve data. We provide a set of encryption technologies within Windows that you can use to encrypt data. We provide trust services, which allows you to do some encryption and key management. But it's not our responsibility to encrypt your data. There is no tick box in the storage that says, please encrypt. Why do you think we haven't got a tick box that says, please encrypt? Because we'd have the keys. We don't want the keys. Put the keys somewhere else. The keys could be in Azure, just make it really hard to find them. They can be elsewhere as well. That's a better idea. So you can do this. You can encrypt. We do have a lot of customers on there who have pretty sensitive data that is encrypted. And the keys are not on Azure. And it works really well. Quick question there. The question is, are the key lengths constrained? No, you're responsible for the encryption piece on that. You can decide what type of keys you're using, how long they are, which algorithm you want to use, how many times you encrypt it, how you split it up. A lot of people take the file, they go and encrypt it, and then they chunk it up and then encrypt different parts of the file with different keys and then go and store that randomly across different storage accounts. Makes it incredibly hard for someone without that knowledge at the front end to go and piece the file back together again. So it's entirely up to you how you do that. And we can obviously, there's technologies in Windows that can help, and certainly our services people can also help kind of advise on that. How do you secure access to applications? Again, we provide a platform that allows you to do stuff. How you secure your applications is entirely up to you. We provide a bunch of technologies that make this easier or harder, depending on which way you look at it. You could even use forms authentication in your ASP.NET projects if you wanted to, across an unsecure HTTP channel, right? There's no bit in the portal that says, I want you to make sure that all my apps running meet this certain requirement. Ooh, that's quite important. Governance is quite important within an IT organization. Not with us. We don't have a governance button. You've got to figure out how to do that for your apps. This changes the developer story considerably because they now have the responsibility of ensuring that the app is secure. We have technologies like Access Control Service. You can integrate with Enterprise Identity, do federation. You can even build your own network up, put your own AD server in Windows Azure now, and hook it all up that way if you wanted to. But it's you've got to do that, okay? Now, the great thing about that is you've got a lot of flexibility. Nothing changed. You can still do a lot of the same things. The downside is you've got to do them. It's not you're not protected now by a whole bunch of enterprise security software at the edge that prevented the outside world from getting anywhere near your app. Your app's now exposed. What if you have strict compliance requirements? Good luck, just saying. We're working through these. We've got a lot of the basic things. Some people won't even have a conversation with us unless we've got ISO. Like you got ISO 27001. At some point last year, we were saying no because we didn't have it. Now, I want to stop here a little bit. All of our Microsoft data center-y things, whether it's Office 365, Windows Azure, Xbox, Bing, if you've heard of it, it runs in one of our data centers, all run on a set of infrastructure which is maintained by a group within Microsoft called Global Foundation Services. Global Foundation Services have more certificates and more compliance things done than I can ever remember. But that makes nothing, means no difference whatsoever to any of those services running on top of it. So even though the data center had ISO 27001, when we deployed Azure, we still had to go and do the gaps. So a lot of the time, our kind of marketing material looks a bit funny. It's like, and it's built on Global Foundation Services, which has PCI. And everybody gets excited to go, oh, Dave, Windows Azure has PCI. Whoa, time out, slow down. Whoa. Windows Azure doesn't have PCI. It's not on the slide. Our data center can handle PCI workloads. Yes, it can, and it's certified. And it does for billing. The billing part of Azure actually runs in the PCI bit of the data center. It has to because of all the obvious reasons. We have other services that also have billing components. They run within the PCI bit of the data center. But we haven't done the extra bit to go and get Windows Azure there. So there's a couple of things there. One, means we're actually quite good at getting certifications now. We actually quite know what the ins and outs of everything are, how to protect systems really well, and what types of things to be looking for. Because we've got about 200-plus services running within our data centers. We have a whole dedicated, not a team, a whole division within Microsoft running our data centers and thinking about security at that level. So it's not just some guy who's like the IT manager and then on Tuesdays does the security thing as well, right? Also, getting the gaps can be quite easy because we already have a lot of the infrastructure done. It really is a gap analysis. So we can probably move quite quickly through some of those. The other thing about core services, and I forgot to mention, is everybody's then like, when does SQL Azure get it then? SQL Database, but only Microsoft appreciate that name change, I think. Soon. So they're a little bit behind everybody else, and they're going to catch up in a slightly different order than what the core services got them in. But it is coming. Again, it's about risk. So You've got to look at these certifications. You've got to get your auditors to talk. There are some certificates we can share with you, but the certificate just says, hey, we've got it. You really need to have that kind of auditor conversation. Sometimes it requires Microsoft signing a document, like the EU model clause or the HIPAA BAA. We'll actually sign something and trade with your solicitors, your lawyers and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, not everything fits. I really wanted to have a picture of someone streaking through a tennis match or a football game or something like that, just to show that some things aren't appropriate in public. But I had to own the copyright on the slide, and that was getting a bit hard on that. So, in summary, Windows Azure gives you a rock-solid foundation. I just like to use that term, rock-solid, for security. We have best practices. We're quite good at securing Windows, you would hope. We run just a little over 200 services, all in a secure fashion on there. That's not to say we don't have our moments, but we have a team dedicated to not only running the data centers, we also have a dedicated security response team. If you think there's a breach or you think your app's under attack or something like that, you can call Microsoft Security Response Team and they will do stuff with you. Whether that's putting some DOS kind of software in front of yours or blocking IP addresses or stuff, they will help you work through that. Responsibilities have definitely changed. Sometimes people go, hey, it's a cloud. You run the app. Everything's your responsibility. And I say, no, we run the platform. You run your app. You've got to build your app to be secure as well. Managing risk hasn't changed. You still need all the information to go determine, is this a good place for my data or my app? And it depends is a big part of that. And please go and review the Trust Center, because that's where you're going to get the most up-to-date information. Every time we get a new certification or we have a new white paper on how to build this, that, and the other, that's where it's going to land and show up on there. Unfortunately, we lack the ability to inform people by email when this page updates, so you're going to have to make it one of your Friday afternoon browsing places to keep up to date on that. We've got some time for some questions. I'm going to be around today and tomorrow, and I'll probably be on the Windows Azure booth as opposed to the security booth. So I'll be on the Windows Azure booth. There are two types of questions you can ask me. There's the type where you don't have an NDA, and you're going to get a good answer, but there may be some things I can't share with you. If you have an NDA, you can come in and ask me way more things, and I get way more deeper on some of those items as well. So if you're looking at the cloud and you have some particular questions about, Dave, what do you do in a background check? I can kind of answer some of those things depending upon the status of the relationship you have with Microsoft, and that boils down to whether you have an NDA or not on that. So please do come and find me on the booth. But we've got about 8 minutes left, so we can do some questions. And if I could ask, if you have a question, if you could come to one of the mics, that would be awesome, because my ears don't work very well. We have a couple of people coming on the questions. You, sir, you were first. You were like,
yeah. So this sounds great. What do you think is the best vehicle to start discussing this with our potential clients? Because typically this is the first thing, you know, without really knowing a lot about Azure, security is always the first thing that we hear. So what's the process or the vehicle that you've seen or you recommend to start getting this information and educating potential clients?
It's a great question. There's a couple of things. I might this is a long answer, actually. So there's a couple of things to think about. First of all, 9 times out of 10, security is the last thing that the customer is talking to us about. Because quite often, they just don't even consider it, right? They're used to buying Windows Server from us. It runs in their data center. They've never had a security conversation with us. They've never had a compliance conversation. And sometimes we just fail to bring it up. And then what happens is we go and do a proof of concept with a customer, and they go and invest some money and some time and resources into learning about the platform and building something. Then they're like, we're going to put this into production now. And then the security guy pops up and goes, no, you're not. I need this 400 question. I don't know why you got 75 from. This 400-page questionnaire filled out in blood on the thing. And then 3 months later, after we've had quite a few conversations, because all the time where we're telling the customer how Windows Azure works and that there's web roles and worker roles and VMs and networking and all that, you weren't there. So you go, well, sounds like a hoster to me. Here's my hoster questionnaire. And they go, oh, that's wrong. I get questions like, how do you patch the OS? Like, how fast do you take patches from Microsoft? So it's like, yeah, usually before you do, because we don't wait until Tuesday, funnily enough, just said. So there's fun things like that. So first of all, education about how the platform works is really important, because without it, a lot of the discussions about how we build the network, how we isolate the VMs is just meaningless. And I've seen the security guys go, Dave, you're just going blah, blah, blah. Like, help me out here. Like, I have a box, right, and I'm going to run my VM on it. I go, no, you don't have a box and you don't have a VM. That's the point. And so we've got to go through our education with the security guys. So first of all, tell them about Azure. You've got to tell them how it works, what it looks like, so that when you are talking security with them, it actually puts it into context. The second thing, there's some great white papers on the Windows Azure Trust Center. The security guys should be made to read every word on that place. There's a lot of nice, hey, we're really rock solid secure marketing stuff. And then there's a couple of great white papers where it actually goes into details about the sizes of keys we use for this, that, and the other, and what protocols and all that kind of thing. So it's well worth a read through that. So I hope that kind of helps. But I've seen so many deals with Microsoft where security's been the last thing, and it's blocked the deal, or it's blocked the project. And I don't mean for a few days, I mean months. Because there was assumptions made, there's data's not encrypted, they don't know how to do the compliance, like, it can really get you into trouble on that.
Yeah, I've seen kind of the opposite, where that's the first thing that comes.
I would love to work in your world. My job used to be clearing up, I'm still being recorded, you know what I mean, clearing up the mess on that. You, sir, I hope that answers your question, okay? Cool. Yes,
is there anything interesting that you've discovered while you're pursuing the HIPAA mandate that's different from other kinds of certificates? Or if you want to say anything about HIPAA.
So the question is, have we found anything interesting doing HIPAA than some of the other things? I'm not going to answer that question. We haven't got the HIPAA BAA yet. We're not able to do that. More than happy offline to have a conversation about that. On that, I think that might be something we don't want to share. Security is, what's really fun about security is, if you don't ask, we probably won't tell you. And for good reason. It's like, hey, I'm going to tell you exactly how we do storage and how we manage all the keys. The hacker's like, awesome, you're going to save me so much time by telling me exactly how it all works. So there's that kind of level of, but I'd be happy to have a conversation. Not that I know a great deal about the HIPAA BAA thing. And I feel Microsoft Legal. Sean Miller's just gone, bip, David. Silence. You, sir.
How about pen testing? Do you hire any third parties to do that sort of thing?
We absolutely do, yeah. So we pen test the platform. We do not pen test your app. And we do this on a regular basis. We don't share the results, obviously. We have never had anything significant found, which is really good. Any minor things we've had, we've been able to turn around pretty quick. And we treat it the same way, you know, all Windows security vulnerabilities kind of go through the same kind of thing anyway. Remember back over the Christmas holidays, there was a big kind of like, everybody was affected by some web server-y kind of thing. Yeah, we were rolling out the fixes for that before even the announcement kind of went out there. We had some time, obviously, before the announcements were going out, but we're pretty quick patching that. What's great is all of this, as long as you're not building your own VM, we're going to patch the hell out of everything from a security point of view pretty darn quick. On that. Usually we're rolling out those updates, you know, fairly quickly from when we discover.
So I guess the obvious reply to that is what happens with your aggressive patching when it breaks my app foo.bar?
It's another risk. I'll be absolutely honest with you. We so far, touch wood, have not broke anyone with a patch rollout. We have a very small OS footprint in terms of the drivers that we use, because it's great. It's kind of like, can you imagine walking into Best Buy and going, I'd like 100,000 of that, please. We have tremendous buying power to get the right kind of hardware in, so it reduces our driver footprint, which also reduces the vulnerability footprint down. We don't need to take patches for services that we don't use them. So we don't take everything that comes along. We take all of the Sev 0, Sev 1 kind of security stuff, but we don't take, you know, hey, this will make this driver work better or this piece of code work better. It's like, whatever. So the footprint's quite small where we could potentially screw you up, but it could happen on that. And you have no control over when we patch the host. So the host is the OS that runs your VM that your app runs in. You can control that. You can turn off automatic patching, and then you basically, you need to keep an eye on the patches. And you can then, instead of going Windows Update, you just choose from the drop-down list which version of the guest OS, that's what we call it, you would like. So that makes it a little bit easier on that. So you do have time to go and spin up an environment, do the testing, tear it down, and then move production across there. If you can, though, and if you're using .NET, typically you get away with this more, is go into automatic and have your VMs upgrade underneath you without any kind of warning on that.
When you're at the booth, how do you validate or verify if we have an NDA or not?
Because hopefully two things will happen. One is I'll get my smart card reader from Craig, and then I'll look in our NDA system and see. Because then you could just walk up and go, hey, Dave, I've got an NDA with you. Turn your press badge around and ask me about, I don't know, whatever. That would work. Okay, no more questions. We're about 7 seconds away from finishing. Thank you very much for your time. Hope this has been useful, and do come see me at the booth if you have questions. Thank you.